This is producer Matt with a quick note before we start your episode. The podcast you're about to listen to sounds a little rough. This is because of a recording issue we had in studio, so please bear with us. We will be getting that audio quality back up to par in no time. Thanks.
Another episode where I am laying out the arguments for infant baptism. I'm Pastor Brandon Neely, and once again, I am all by myself. Hopefully, I'm getting a little bit better at this. But today, this is episode 16, I believe, I hope, I think. And today's title is The Oikos Formula. If you haven't listened to the podcast before, would you go back to episode 1 so you can hear the tone and get the context and see a little bit of the purpose of these podcasts. But if you're not going to go back to episode 1, let me remind you, the purpose of these podcasts is to lay out succinctly and clearly the arguments for infant baptism. I've come to the conclusion that infant baptism is good, right, and true, that in addition to baptizing the believers who are adults, we should also baptize their infants when they are born. Why? Because they are members of the covenant. They receive the promises of the covenant. They are members of the church. They are consecrated. They should be given the sign of that consecration and the seal of the promise of God so that they can look at that seal and know that God signs in blood, as it were, his promises. If they believe, they will be forgiven and they will be washed. These are the arguments, and I hope you will listen to them like good Bereans. And I hope you will study them out, be convinced in your own mind, and make sure you're praying, because it's not just about the mind, it's also about the heart and spiritual warfare and fears and anxieties and emotions and risk. And so make sure you're praying that God would give you the gift of faith and the gift of rational, reasonable, logical thinking so that you can put two and two together and come to the right conclusion. I don't know for certain that that everything I say is perfectly accurate, but I do believe we either should baptize infants or not baptize infants. I believe we should. I don't believe it's an issue that should divide us, but I do believe it's an important issue that we need to get to the bottom of, especially if you have infants on the way. And so, as an advocate for the babies, I'm laying out these arguments. I hope you will listen to them and give me grace as I explain these things. And hopefully you see my heart that I merely want to shepherd everyone in our church in the right way and anyone else who's listening to these podcasts all over our global audience. So today, the Oikos formula, the household formula, one of the most important arguments for infant baptism. Let me begin by saying this. The Bible uses various household-related words and kinship terminology. And some of these point to concepts that many modern evangelical Westerners simply have no experience with. For example, the history of ancient Israel is replete with references to clans and tribes. Yet how many of us can really relate to that? The Bible speaks of many household members, such as fathers and mothers, of course, but also uncles and nephews can be in a household, and aunts and grandmothers and brothers and sisters and maidservants and bond slaves. We just sense that the family experiences and the family relationships that are described in parts of the Bible are just not precisely the way we understand family today. You know, we read that parents sometimes set their children up for marriage, arranged marriages. Slaves could be a permanent member of the family household. Right? The inheritance settlement could be exercised by a kinsman redeemer. I mean, who of us understands these concepts? Who would not have to study long and hard to be able to wrap their mind around these cultural aspects that are totally different than our modern, ruggedly individualistic Western secular minds? You see, the issue of baptism is surrounded by this family terminology. You know, brothers and sisters and adopted and household of God and fathers of the faith and born again and in a household. You see, when we look into the New Testament, we see a lot of baptisms, but every single one of them is of a believing adult, and every single one of them but three, all the household of the believing adult is also baptized. How do we understand that? Household baptisms? That's the oikos formula. Oikos is Koine Greek for household, but it is not a concept, really, that we have in our modern-day minds. So we have to look into it. When the New Testament tells us that a household was baptized, what would the first hearers have thought? If we're going to study this out, we need to study the grammar, but we've got to study the history as well. Today, we think individually. We're all units in the great collective. Children, you know, might move across the country from their hometown just to secure a better job. Or parents sometimes leave their children for better jobs, right? When their children are having grandchildren. I mean, this would have been unthinkable to the ancient world. It's unthinkable to me as well, honestly. But what does the New Testament mean by this term household? What does it mean? So let's begin our investigation. First, there's about 24 different words in the New Testament that are derived from the oikos stem. Greek, Koine Greek, is not like modern-day English, not exactly, and so this might be a difficult concept to understand, but there are many words such as home, house, a place to live, slave, steward, the inhabited earth, master, to manage a household, to be a member of a household, chores, family member. These words that we use in English, all of these words in Koine Greek are formed from the stem of the word oikos, household. You know, the oikos despotes. You might recognize some of that English. It's the despot of the oikos, the despot of the home. That's a name for a wife who is to be the manager of the household. Very interesting and quite funny term, I do believe. I often remind my wife she is the oikos despotes, the despot of the home. And she gets a good laugh out of that. Well, you see, we just don't have these concepts in our world today. In the Old Testament, oikos can be changed up to refer to a tent or a place of worship or the lineage of Israel, God's people, the house of the Lord, the household of the Lord, the house of prayer. It can refer to a building. It can refer to the people that live in the building. The church is the household of God. It's a spiritual household. The temple is the house of God. This word oikos and all of its various stems really refers to a lot of things in the New Testament. But do we understand it? Right? Continuing on our investigation, every single one of the baptisms in the New Testament, except for three, Paul, who did not have a household, the eunuch, who obviously did not have a household, and Simon the sorcerer, which we don't know, those are the only three exceptions. But other than that, every single other one was an adult who was baptized with his entire household. Four of those are explicit: the Philippian jailer, Lydia, Stephanas, and Gaius, I do believe. And four others are implicit. In the Greek, I do believe it's explicit. That's a little bit debated. But if the Bible is trying to exclude infants from baptism, then why do the New Testament writers keep depicting these household baptisms, which seem to echo the baptism of Abraham, who is, by the way, according to Paul in the book of Galatians, the prototype Gentile believer? He was a Gentile. He believed. He received the sign of that covenant. And then all of his children, his whole household, including the maidservants and the bond slaves and the aunts and the uncles, over 300 and something people, received the sign of that covenant. If the New Testament authors are trying to exclude children, they're doing a terrible job at it, especially using this oikos formula, especially mentioning the households are being baptized. Now, in the New Testament, not every household had to include infants. We don't know if the household of Lydia had suckling babes in their midst. We don't know. I would be willing to say that it's most likely, considering the size of these households and considering that secularists hadn't invented birth control and abortion and whatnot. But that's beside the point. We don't know for certain if they had infants. But for Paul to use the oikos formula, for him to say that the households are being baptized upon Lydia's faith, for him to say that, and then to say that the households were baptized except for the children, and that infants were excluded, would make no sense. The fact that he uses the term household itself, and that the households are being baptized, means that infants, if they did belong to the household, were certainly not excluded. If Paul was to say that only adults were baptized, he would not have been able to say household. He would not have been able to say the word household without everyone assuming infants too. He would have been a most terrible communicator. Certainly a head of the household being baptized would have had in ancient times major implications for the whole household. Right? Now, this doesn't mean that infant baptism wins the argument automatically. But Paul using the household formula for the baptisms in a Jewish context would have certainly invoked the memory of Abraham. And in fact, Abraham is pictured by Paul in Galatians 3 as a prototype Gentile believer. The households are baptized, and their whole household was baptized with them. This is the way it was for thousands of years, for Abraham, for Noah, for Moses, for David. Are the New Testament writers trying to convince people to exclude infants? They're doing a terrible job at it. In fact, if the apostles intended to exclude infants, then using the household formula for baptisms would have been incredibly misleading. So this isn't perfectly conclusive evidence, but the use of the term household and the baptisms of entire households being repeated over and over again is in nearly every case. It's not perfect evidence, but the burden of proof is on those who say babies are excluded. Anyone who wants to say that needs to show the text where babies are excluded, and there's not a single one. Hope this has been a blessing to you. I'll catch you on the next podcast.